So Brand and Demand Gen, they're not the same, but they run in parallel and they feed off of each other. That if Demand Gen does it right, they help build the brand. And if the brand gets stronger, it helps do Demand Gen.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by The Juice. Our mission is to squeeze out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals to help you push your brand to the forefront of the industry. Let's raise a glass. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Content Cocktail Hour. I'm Jonathan Gandolf, your host of the show and founder and CEO of The Juice. I'm thrilled to be joined today by Matt Lyman, VP of Demand Generation at Lean Data. It's going to be a fun conversation. I come from the demand gen side of the kind of marketing house, and we'll certainly spend some time talking about that, as well as I think what Lean Data is working on and some of their content's really cool as well. So excited to dig into all of it today. But before we do that, Matt, in your own words, share a little bit about your background, what led you to Lean Data, and what you're up to at Lean Data.
Well, thank you. I super appreciate being here, and I'm excited to talk through this. Matt Lyman, as you mentioned, I'm the VP of Demand Gen at Lean Data. I got into marketing randomly through project management and through all of that, and kind of worked my way through different company sizes from VC-owned into startup world, and brought myself to Lean Data because I was a customer, and when I was looking for a new job and they had the opening, I said, I want to be there. So if you don't know what Lean Data is, we are an orchestration platform. What that means is we allow you to take all of the inbound signals that you have in your CRM and you can orchestrate them however you need to. It's your data, your information, but in one visual flow, you can take anything and move it over however you want.
Very cool. Yes, we're big fans of yours. Excited to learn more about what that means for how you're doing marketing at Lean Data. But Matt, the Content Cocktail Hour, we always like leading the way, asking our guests what they're enjoying drinking nowadays.
Okay, so I live in Seattle. I'm not wearing a flannel right now. I do have a Mud Honeys poster on the wall directly behind me. So it would be really sad and I guess basic if I was just to say, I like a good IPA. I do like beer. I'm into pilsners and lagers right now, but if I was to sit down and have a cocktail, a really good old fashioned rye whiskey with a nice old fashioned. And then I do want to say, because I know I'm a big person about inclusion, and I actually include that in cocktail hours, that for those that don't drink, if you like some of the flavor, Sierra Nevada has a hop water that is delightful. My wife does not like beer and she likes this stuff. It's got a little bit of a lemony taste to it. It's really good.
That's fascinating. I am a big IPA fan as well, and you are in the land of West Coast IPAs up there in Seattle, so that's cool. And Sierra Nevada is actually my favorite brewery in the world. Their pale ale is what I always have in the fridge. I'll have to check out that hop water. That sounds really nice.
It's really good. It's got a little bit of a hoppy flavor to it, so it's got that, but it's everyone's doing hop waters now, so if you find a brewery you like that's doing one, it's probably going to be something you like.
That's cool. Yeah, and we just had a guest mention a phony Negroni. I've been pleasantly surprised at how many like non-alcoholic options guests have mentioned. So always some good ones to check out. Very cool stuff there. Well, Matt, you mentioned what Lean Data does, and I'm super curious, does that kind of like the ethos of the business around data, operational efficiencies, does that kind of bleed its way into the ethos of how the marketing team operates and the content that you all are creating?
That's a really great question. We are a very efficiency focused, just in general. I think as a company and as a product, our founder and CEO, Evan, has a very strong efficiency mindset. And not in the bad way, like you hear a CEO say that, but that's why he helped build Lean Data. That's why he founded it, was because, hey, we want to help make people more efficient in what they're doing. And if you've ever used the tool, it does. Lean Data has the ability for you to flowchart stuff out. For me, I have an operations background originally, and flowcharts were kind of technically how I got found in my business profile. I was doing collections for a bankruptcy law firm. Yep, I'll say that again. Collections for a bankruptcy law firm. That's my SDR experience. And we had these processes that we had to go through that were not documented. And I found Microsoft Visio, and it quickly became one of my favorite tools ever. And it helped me get seen because that's what I liked. So I think that's one of the reasons I really love what we do as a company, And so the overall efficiency of it, being able to say, instead of reading a document, right, instead of, this is not a shade at Marketo. I used Marketo for years, and I used to use their routing. But like them and a couple of our competitive set, they have the if this then that routing. And usually what happens on those is if it breaks in the middle, if somebody leaves, all of a sudden everything down the road breaks. So for me, to get back to your efficiency question, being able to see it and being able to say, yeah, that's how it works. Yes, it followed through. Oh, nope, there was an error. Let's go figure it out. That to me is efficiency, not asking the ops team to go and search why. So as it gets to our team, we follow through a lot of that. We're agile. We are always trying to not reinvent, but continue to grow and optimize what we do and how we talk about things. Because our audiences are us. So the people who use our tool are operators, like RevOps teams, sales ops, marketing ops. They're salespeople, people who we all know, who we've all talked to. It's the people who are trying to get the stuff done and their bosses. And it's marketers. So if we can sit down and say, okay, what is the best way to do that? And sometimes it's a big campaign. Sometimes it's the very specific message or them do their job, right? So there's the efficiency internally of how we get stuff going. And then there's the efficiency of how we're helping them. And I notice how long I just took to talk about efficiency, which is kind of antithetical, right? But it's so easy in all of in the B2B SaaS world to just go and try to just do too much. And there's always the question, you go into a board meeting or into a budget cycle, and somebody says, hey, I see that your ads are performing quite well right here. What if we just throw money at it? That's not efficient. And that's not going to work. Like, we all know that as marketers. So being able to talk to that and say how it goes, right? We have to be efficient in our budgets. We have to be efficient in what we do. And we have to be focused with it.
Yeah, I think we as marketers, myself included, are often guilty of overcomplicating things or getting in our own way. I remember I was a VP of marketing at last company, and we were interviewing CMOs, and I forget what the question even was, but she was like, my entire job is to do more of what works and less of what doesn't work. And it was like such an obvious statement, but I was just kind of like, yeah, when you boil it down, like there's some simplicity in that that is so refreshing that is just like, if it doesn't work, we're not going to do it. We do it all the time at The Juice, where it's like, we sell to marketers as well, obviously. And we're like, if our marketer isn't using this, then like, how the hell do we expect our customers to use? Like it's such a good like test or kind of filter to run everything we're doing through is like, does it help us? If not, then it's probably not going to help our customers either. And building from there. So that's really interesting.
That's a really good point too. And I think that as you sit through and you think about really the different all the phases of marketing, if it's not going to help us, like why would we be trying to give it to them? And I think that's why I get really bullish about, I don't want to call it a shift. I feel like it's more visible now than it used to be. But like companies like HubSpot and others who they write blog posts or content that are about helping their people, helping the people who are using them. It's not necessarily about their product. I was searching for a quote attribution the other day, and it was a HubSpot quote. And all of the posts that were coming up, I was like, this doesn't actually sell me HubSpot, but this is a really helpful content for somebody. It was about sales, something that's super helpful for them. They have now become a trusted advisor in that situation, and people are going to go to that. And I think that has become more prevalent, and I love it. It's the idea of, if it's not going to help the person, why am I putting it out there?
Yep. I always say, you know, it's sexy to say good content converts, but I think content in and of itself doesn't convert. I think great content educates and entertains, and then something along the way converts at a later date. So that's fascinating. So you're demand gen, and I didn't actually understand your background, but it sounds like you maybe aren't like a traditionally trained marketer. I think you mentioned project management. Collections for a bankruptcy.
You want me to just quickly, you want the quick rundown?
Yeah, let's hear it. And how'd you end up in demand gen?
This is the quick rundown because it's like a 20-year story, so I won't. I went to theater for acting and for playwriting, so I love creativity. It's just kind
classic
of
demand gen background.
Classic. Yeah. My dad was a salesperson. He and my grandfather owned a laboratory furniture company. And so I used to see the sales side of it all the time. Went to school for theater. It's where I met my wife. We moved to Seattle after that, after, you know, doing musical theater. Here's one for you. We started dating while playing. She was Maria and I was Riff in West Side Story. So that's always a fun one. But we moved to Seattle and I realized I needed an adult job. I couldn't just work restaurants and try to get into, I shouldn't say that because there's people that go out and they do it. I have good friends that are still doing theater, but I wanted the security. So I found this job and it was the collections. Didn't know what I was doing. I'd worked a few office jobs here and there, but I worked my way through. And after a few years, I was a supervisor and they were doing project management trainings and I did it. I've got a Six Sigma green belt. That's right. That's for a 30 Rock reference for all of our friends that they're real. And they opened up, they started a marketing team because we were doing some other stuff. And I was the first non-leader on the team. First project was implementing Microsoft Dynamics CRM, did all the trainings, did all that stuff. And ended up, that company got purchased by a competitor. It was VC, so it didn't matter. They just took all of the funds. I was part of the transition team. And then I followed the COO to a new company in the financial services industry that I learned a bunch from. That's where I was like doing a jack of all trades, all marketing, et cetera. So there for about 4 years and then had a kid. I didn't want to commute as far anymore. And I had gone back to school to get my MBA in global marketing management. So I did go back and get that marketing knowledge. We all know it's school. It's not marketing knowledge. It's the knowledge about SWOTs and you're doing the leadership stuff. So you're going through economics and all that. And then I found Chef Software, which is now it was purchased. So Chef Software is now a part of Progress, but I was there for 6 years before the purchase, stuck around for another year, year and a half, and found Lean Data. When Chef was purchased, I was actually overseeing revenue marketing. So it was the campaigns and programs. It was the website. It was operations. The SDR team had been on my team for a little bit. So just kind of like this big nebulous thing. Not nebulous, that's not what I mean, but like a big swath, we'll just say that, of different teams that all rolled into how are we building pipeline. So when we got purchased, they asked me to stay on the leadership team to lead the demand gen side. And so that's sort of the demand gen word. I think my career has always been so general and so like generalist building. And when I was in the financial services company where we were doing marketing, we used Salesforce. I implemented Pardot. I was essentially doing RevOps and marketing at the same time. Like I was running all the quote to cash and all that stuff. So yeah, it was a broad swath of things, a very different path than some people take. But I also think that like that's helped, right? Because I've not only tried different things, but I've been learning at every step. And it just kind of keeps you like, as I mentioned before, we have board meetings coming up. I've been building slides. Building slides for board meetings, they're not easy. And every single time you do it, somebody wants something else or you're talking about a different story. And so to tie this into something actionable, it's all a learning process. Every single bit of it should be. And I think for me, that's why I've loved this kind of all over the map journey.
Well, especially in SaaS where like, or tech, you know, broadly where the technology is ever evolving. I think the ability to learn is probably the strongest capability you can have, and I'm sure has suited you well very clearly. So we've hit Marketo, Pardot, and Microsoft Dynamics, the trifecta of things that are like impossible to implement that it sounds like you've been involved in implementing. So impressive work there. You deserve a medal or something.
And then we switched from Marketo to Eloqua while I was after Chef got purchased at Progress, and then we're on HubSpot at Lean Data. So
you've seen it all. That's impressive. That is very cool. So I'm curious though, you landed in demand gen, and I'm going to Michael Scott this where I'm going to start a question. I'm not exactly sure where it's going to end, but I feel like in content and marketing so often we see there are very clearly like two sides of the coin, right? There's like brand and demand gen. And everybody always wants to kind of almost like pit them against each other or speak to them as very separate entities within marketing. But I'm curious how you, in your perspective in demand gen, think about investment in brand and vice versa, how brand works with demand gen. And then the follow-up question to that will be around content. But maybe first, let's just speak to like how you think demand gen and brand typically work or don't work together.
I love this question because it's one that I haven't really specifically thought about. And there's going to be a LinkedIn thought leader somewhere that comes at me for this. So brand and demand gen, the way that I'm going to say this first is completely wrong, but I think that it actually fits. They're the same. And the reason I say that's wrong is because they're not, right? We know they're not. Brand, you've got a lot of motions you have to take care of. You're actually working on, maybe it's all, there's design pieces, there's website pieces, there's the actual conversations. You've got PR and AR. But why is demand gen not the same? You've got activities and actions that you're taking. Yes. You're trying to build demand. Both of those take long amounts of time. Both of them should be working together. And I think that both of them build stronger pipelines. So sort of as you Michael Scotted the question, I'm kind of Michael Scotting the answer, where I'm starting it and like, I'm not quite sure where it's going to go. But the truth for me is that the right demand gen puts the brand front and center, builds the brand. So I'm not going to say that I have brand on my team. Brand at Lean Data is the entire marketing team's job. My team does oversee content and design and the website. So we have that's part of my team. We have those pieces, but I wouldn't say that we own it. The brand itself is, it just steps back into all of our favorite pieces, right? Like if you say Nike has built a brand, their demand gen is their brand, right? Like quite honestly, they know how to do it. This is very different with B2C, and you've got sneakerheads out there that they just say, hey, on this day, we're going to be releasing a new shoe, and they put it where they need to go, right? There's the demand gen. They go to where the people are. They talk to them about it, how it goes, what it is. People line up around the block to get those new shoes because of the brand. So I think that they do work hand in hand. So to go back to what I first said with, I think they're the same. They're not the same, but they run in parallel and they feed off of each other. That if demand gen does it right, they help build the brand. And if the brand gets stronger, it helps do demand gen.
That's awesome. I love that. I love the soundbite there of the right demand gen puts brand front and center. And I think then you also ended it with the kind of the vice versa, the right brand work makes demand gen work better. It's a flywheel, which is awesome. Yeah. I think incorrectly, like I said in the question, like a lot of times we think of them as like different sides of the same coin. But really that they should both be on the same side and support each other. So then how do you at Lean Data think about content? You mentioned content, it sounds like, is on your team. What is the goal of content? Because we see this all the time. We ask, you know, how do you guys measure success with content? For some people, it's views, impressions, feel goods of like, you know, just kind of this thought leadership and getting their point of view in market. Others, it's raw, like marketing qualified leads, pipeline created, and all measurables kind of on the demand gen side of how you would traditionally define it. So I'm curious, from your seat, how do you think about content? How does Lean Data broadly think about content?
So there's a few things. The lead tracking or an MQL tracking or anything like that is becoming tougher without a bunch of new tools because gating is going away. I don't believe that you should gate everything. I do think there's the valuable stuff you should, and you got to figure that out yourself. So I think that views is always going to be one that is successful. To go back just really fast, where you said, you know, how are we looking at it? Right now, we're looking at views. We're looking at campaign member of the download, whatever, however that works. We're looking at it based off of our program focus. So specific campaigns that we have running, the product maybe ties into that as well. But the bigger piece that I'm really getting into on it is how many of them are part of a deal cycle. Because sort of as the brand conversation we just had, it takes time and content gets out there and you can go in and you know, we're talking about buying groups a lot right now. And we launched this really cool ebook back in April that our customers loved. We took it to Forrester. They loved it. It is one of our top three performing pieces of content. But if we look at it, I was surprised to actually find out that our number one is an event management playbook that we put together. So people, as they were getting into event season, you want to know why? They're different personas, right? So it goes back into the like, are we hitting the right people? Are we hitting the people with the right stuff? So for me, I want to see how many downloads or views or whatever, because I want to know what's working, just top level, or people looking at it. If you spend a bunch of time doing a report and you get 10 downloads, well, is that great? Well, maybe, because you take all the stuff out of it, you repurpose it, you push it out, you do other stuff, and then maybe. Yeah. But if you see a blog post or a very simple white paper that takes off, And so like, I want to just take a look at those and see which ones are doing this, which ones are going, it's a podcast, no one can see that, which ones are going up, which ones are going down, right? But then being able to dive into it, and it's not about sourcing. Sourcing's good. I can take a look and see how many opportunities came directly from this, but I don't want the sourcing. I want to be able to see if it was part of a conversation. So if I look back and I say there were 25 opportunities touched by this piece of content, how much are those opportunities worth? Because then there becomes a piece, and I'm not at this point yet, this is where I want to get, of being able to look at those different areas, content specifically, and being able to break them down by close rate. Because if you can track it that way, you should be able to say, hey, look, guys, these two pieces of content, this one is part of 20 opportunities that close at 50%. This one here is a part of 40 opportunities and they've closed at 10%. Which one should we be pushing? And so I think that's a piece. And I do also want to call out quickly that it's that fun balancing act of which one do we want to succeed versus which one is succeeding? And then taking a look and saying, do we need to promote more the one that we want to succeed? Because we need to do that, right? Obviously, it's just based off of your funnel and your funnel positions and all that stuff. So I think it's definitely, there's top line numbers, but then there's the like, how is it actually working? And as I said, I'm not there yet. I'm almost there. I'm working through those data points. But once you have that, you're like, boom. So that's how we want to measure it. And our overall strategy, we have a content strategist and some contract resources to help with some of the other stuff, right? The stuff that you don't need to have a lot of technical knowledge necessarily, maybe. But that person can only do so much. So we have to like prioritize it based off of roadmaps, the next 6 months, what's coming up, how are we building that? And then if you take it, we go back to the conversation about that report doesn't do great. Okay, let's give it to a contractor and see if they can break it out into a couple of other pieces of content to do that, right? Because you've got to be able to expand that out somewhat.
I actually love that use case of something that didn't work, repurposing it. Like, I think repurposing, atomizing, redistributing right now is like really trendy to talk about and do. I think it's a good strategy. But I think so often we're talking about repurposing what's already worked. But I actually love that perspective of like, hey, just because it doesn't work the first time, it could be format. It could be delivery channel. It could be random luck. You know, like there's a lot to be said for the time and all the algorithms we're serving. Like, so I actually really like that and appreciate that perspective of it didn't work. Let's try again. And, you know, maybe if it fails twice, then it's like, all right, let's move on to something else. But I think like that's a really kind of eye-opening perspective, I think.
Yeah, I think it's fun to look at, as you just said, like, is it the delivery? Is it all of that? And I think that my team rules because like our social media and community manager will go, okay, so we did it this way. We've noticed that if we do it this other way, it does better, right? And so you can go and say, we did this. I'm just going to keep using this report. We did this report. Okay, great. What if we took the five biggest findings of it, did a quick Canva build out of a carousel and threw it on LinkedIn? Well, you quickly find that those carousels engage better. People click through it. They see it. I don't need a conversion off of that. I want somebody to be looking at it and looking at how we're doing it because they hopefully, if you do it right, they will. That's not a hopefully. If you do it right, they will come back to read more or do more.
And actually, I'm not surprised to hear the event management playbook resonated well. It's that actually hits on two things that we see often on our platform. One, playbooks or templates, toolkits. Those outperform other content formats by a factor of about 3 on our platform. And anything that calls out a job title or a job function in the title also outperforms. So, you know, something as simple as putting together those two kind of pieces of job function or title plus playbook or template, I'm not surprised to hear that performs well.
I think it's a cool piece of content. I think that they did a really good job on it. What I want to just call out is that it is actually actionable. Like there is a page that shows the zone coverage you should have at a booth, like who should be where. We found out like our fractional CMO actually gave it to somebody that they know and they were like, oh my God, this is amazing. Oh my God. And like started handing it out to people. And I'm like, cool, great. We have this piece of content because everybody does. And we've done it. We have one. Everyone does an ABM ebook. Everyone does a how to do ABM. How to do speed to lead, how to better follow up with this, how to write no offense. No, I'm just kidding. How to write better content. How to write better content for sales leads, right? Everybody just kind of does that. And I think that you're right. Like playbook and event management, like people are looking for, it's almost event season. It's Dreamforce. How are we doing this?
Yeah, it goes back to what you're saying a little bit full circle on the HubSpot example, where it's like event manager, not your core persona. I think I'm right in that, but
we can help them. Yeah,
sure. Exactly. But you're just going to create helpful content and trust that that's going to build the brand affinity that drives the demand gen. So it's very like kind of full circle in all of that. It's really cool. Well, Matt, we always end these conversations asking, what is one unpopular opinion you have as it pertains to B2B marketing?
Not sure if it's still unpopular, but it's the soapbox that I have right now, to the point where Lopsapalooza let me present on it last year, and there was one of our partners doing the exact opposite presentation.
They should have ran them side by side.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I actually messaged him, and I was like, do you want to do a face-off? I still believe in MQLs. Nobody does. That's not true. Yeah, people do. People are just too afraid. They're too afraid to talk about it. Then you know, it's easy on indie world, right? We'll just say all the influencer world. If people always say something like blank is dead. It's a great headline, but I don't believe that MQLs are dead. I firmly believe that using them as a KPI is dead and should be. But when we say MQLs are dead, you're actually just taking a chunk out of your funnel, because what it should be is an agreement between the marketing and the sales team on what looks to be the best. It's a signal. This is really what it is. So if you build out a scoring model that says half of this score is based off of ICP and persona, and the other half is based off of their activity, then if they take enough activity that you have found to be solid, shouldn't the sales team get that? And I do think that you should track to view if it goes up or down, if you're doing things correctly. But every time I present it to my leadership, I'm like, this is not a KPI. This is to show if we're going up or down and to show if those are actually converting at a better rate.
That's interesting. So measure it, but it's not the like North Star yes. metric that you're marching towards. That's a subtle nuance, but an important one, I think.
Well, because the truth is everyone says MQLs are dead, and then they give you a process that's an MQL. They just changed the
yes.
name.
Yes,
so
exactly.
All I'm saying, everybody, is call it whatever you want, but a lead, a marketing qualified lead, doesn't have to be a lead object. It can be an account. It can be an opportunity. This marketing qualified should be an agreement that all you're doing is saying, go after this person instead of trying to dig through a bunch of random things.
So then can I ask the follow-up question to this? I know I said last question, but I'm so fascinated by this answer. What is the KPI you are telling your leadership team or your board, and yeah. maybe not in place of MQLs, but like what are the KPIs that you are measuring to show effectiveness?
We will look at leads because I want to see if they're being created. We are an account-based motion. So we want to actually see the accounts that are interacting. We want to see pipeline, and we want to see revenue. So my KPIs are around how effective are the things that we're doing specifically to pipeline and then working back. So I want to see from what we've created, how many opportunities are created, how many of them add pipeline, how many of them add closed. There's other steps in there, obviously. And as I said, I'll track MQLs because it is a piece where I'm like, if I know that our MQLs convert at blank, I can work it in there to help us like identify what makes a better MQL. Is it one of these eBooks? Well, great. Let's go make an eBook and send it out to people and get them to do the thing.
It's kind of foundational to everything else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The reason everyone says they're dead is because I can easily take the score and change it.
Yeah. Interesting. Fascinating.
I don't. We focus it. We clean it. We make it better. But it's all about the rest of it, too.
That's a great, great perspective. I love that. Matt, if people want to learn more from you or about Lean Data, what's the best way to do that?
Thank you. Check out leandata.com for all the info. We do have really good resources. We have a great chatbot on there too. You can talk to our AI chatbot if no one's online, Otto, the orchestration otter. But also coming up in September, as everyone knows, is Dreamforce in San Francisco. I'll be at our booth, but at the same time on Wednesday, September 18th, OpStars at the San Francisco Mint. It's free. It's about a 5-minute walk. It's not that far at the San Francisco Mint. It is a day of awesome content. It's called OpStars, but we have tracks that include salespeople, marketers, etc. So come by, and tell you the truth, I think the lunches might be better at OpStars. Sorry, Salesforce.
I love that. That's a cool event venue, San Francisco Mint, I have to imagine. Be cool to check out. So go check that out. Go meet Matt at Dreamforce. I'll be curious to know where you're standing at the booth, because according to your event playbook, you'll have that all figured out. So I'm going to be taking note of that.
Yeah. Yeah. If you come by and I'm in the wrong place after you've looked at that, I'll tell you what, this is not a joke. Not a joke. If you read our event playbook and you come to our booth and I am in the wrong place, I will give you a $10 coffee card.
There you go. That's an offer, folks. So go do your homework. Go meet Matt. Go get your coffee. Or maybe he's in the right spot. Who knows? But there's only one way to find out. Visit Matt at Dreamforce. Right spot,
you owe me a $10 coffee card.
There you go. We've got our first wager on the Content Cocktail Hour. I love it. We'll have all of these links in the show notes. We'll see Matt at Dreamforce. Thank you, everybody, for listening today. Until next time, cheers. Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by The Juice. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us on app.thejuicehq.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.